When I would visit Waldorf schools in the 1980s, I'd be taken out to dinner by the teachers. And, you know, the waitress or waiter would go around and say, you know, anything to drink. And if it was a Friday night, one teacher, one male teacher might say, I'd like a beer. Or one female teacher would say, I'd like a wine. And eyebrows would be raised and so on. Well, it's Friday night and there's no school this weekend. You know, it's okay. I'd say, yeah, but I'm lecturing tomorrow. Right, make that two beers. So, okay, that's 1980s. 1990s, I'm meeting with the teachers, go out to dinner, Tuesday night. Couple of people order beer, wine, and teachers look, school day, oh, it's okay, it's just one. You don't mind, Eugene, do you? Now, what do I care? 2000s, between 2000 and 2010, visiting schools, same school sometimes, go out to dinner. Tuesday night, school the next day, everybody orders not a beer, not a wine, but hard liquor on a school night, except for the kindergarten teacher. She just orders two beers. So, you know, this is an issue. A serious anthroposophist who took on the administration of a charter school out west decided these teachers really need some anthroposophy, and she took them all to Rudolf Steiner College for its February conference for teachers in the West. The first night, they all stayed in a hotel together. They all had, you know, different rooms in the same hotel. The teacher sat around the pool and got so drunk that there were complaints from other people, like people with children in the hotel. And the hotel manager came down and told them, you know, be quiet, okay. Just like the school meeting. Well, he didn't spank them, but he called the cops. And the cops came, and two guys ran out of the building, two teachers. Why? Because they were already involved in disorderly behavior back home. They had court cases coming up because they were drunk. They got drunk in a park, and one of them defaced a menorah in the park and so on. I mean, Waldorf teachers, these are people who are Waldorf, trained Waldorf teachers. And she was just devastated. She quit the job. She just could not handle that. And I said, well, you know, this is what happens when you sense you're supposed to be doing something spiritually and you can't rise to it. This is why so many writers in the 20th century were alcoholics, for example. Something's trying to inspire them and they can't quite meet that. So, as Steiner says, alcohol gives us a false sense of egoity, not the kind of ego we develop and build up, but an ego that just comes and, you know, makes us feel we're on top of the world. I imagine drinking is just going to become endemic in many of the Waldorf schools, and of course drugs as well, which give other spiritual-like experiences because people sense that's what they're supposed to be having. But they're not going at it the right way. Nobody's telling them there's another way of doing this. There's another path. Or if they hear the other path, it just makes them want to dissolve in alcohol anyway. It's just too hard, too complicated. So 2019 points to a very different second 100 years for Waldorf education. And it just points to the central importance of anthroposophical life, anthroposophical work, expanding at the same rate, one would hope, as Waldorf schools. Anthroposophical medicine expanding at the same rate as Waldorf schools. The Christian community expanding at the same rate as Waldorf schools, that there are ways that the teachers as well as the students can really find a kind of support group that underlies the school in one way or another. And this is, the schools are really operating at tremendous disadvantage without those priests, doctors, teachers willing to be priests, eurythmists, and without a really clear anthroposophical path that's there. But not to end on that despairing note, because it really isn't, but I just want to read again from Rudolf Steiner. It would obviously be very wrong for teachers to inculcate their own individuality or even their own sympathies or antipathies in the child, to teach the child as right and desirable what they themselves consider to be right and desirable. In doing so, they would hold the child back at their, the teacher's, own level, and that must never happen. We best avoid this by meditatively acquiring a consciousness of the fact that education has nothing whatsoever to do with a person's individuality, that it is our task as teachers and educators to stand in awe before that individuality and offer our help so that it can follow the laws of its own development. We are merely called upon to remove any obstacles in body or soul that might hinder the individuality from realizing its potential freely. So that's such a picture. Not tests, not scores, not even the accumulation of knowledge and information, but rather that we are simply clearing the way every day, bringing a sense of order, and with that, a sense of healing. But what a job that is. What a task that is, really, for our time and for us. Okay, it's almost 12:30, and we have about half an hour for comments, questions. Joel?
Yeah, so I was at the Waldorf school last week, and a teacher came up to me and I said, well, how are things going at school? And she said, well, it's winding down. This is the time when we tell the students something of how we're teaching and what anthroposophy is. And I got very curious about that, and I don't really know what she meant or what she was talking about. Do you have a clue?
Well, if this is a high school teacher...
No, this is a kindergarten.
Okay.
But she was telling me about something going on in the school.
Yeah.
So I don't know what...
I don't know. I'm not familiar with what might be going on or how that's done. I would say it's, you know, on the face of it, it would not be something to do, except in 12th grade, where there are some schools where, for example, I've been asked to give a lecture to the high school seniors and juniors about Rudolf Steiner, which I'll do on a high school level, of course, and to share with them the four temperaments, how we as teachers worked with you when you were younger, and it's always a lot of fun, but not the younger children. It has no place being there at all. Even that the teacher is sharing a technique or something like that, even non-anthroposophical, no, they want to feel it's just flowing out of you, that you just do this, you know, it's not your job, you just want to be there with them, and that's what you're doing. Yeah. So I don't know. You might want to find out more about what that practice is.
Yes. It used to be in England that the 12th grade students would come together after graduation. And they would have very simplistic courses on aspects of anthroposophy, because of course they've been asking questions a lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this was a way to answer them in a wholesome way.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. Sherry.
It does happen at the Kimberton Waldorf School. Rick has been involved in that, and I have too. Just at the end of 12th grade, it's just the graduating class. Okay. And they may have said that to you knowing that you were an anthroposophist and that
That's what I would imagine it would be. I wouldn't think it would be on the kindergarten or grade school level. But
it just happened to be a kindergarten teacher.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Questions, comments? Grace Ann.
Do you find teachers struggling with how to deal with the technology issues?
That's a very, very big one. And what's happening now is that basically after years and years of getting parents to sign contracts, like in grade one, you know, our child will never be exposed to screens, and then hearing, well, he was at his grandparents and they decided to buy him, an iMac super powerful computer or something like that. That has been a battle that has just been lost and lost and lost. So what's happening now is schools are bringing in experts in a new field called cyber civics, in which children are taught how to be good citizens of the internet. And some schools are having 7th and 8th graders in these courses, others only high school students. But it's going to go down the grades more and more, in which you're taught how to respond to bullying, how you're taught to respond if suddenly pornography appears on your screen, how you're taught whatever, soon it'll be distinguishing fake news from real news or terrorism threats. So basically, cyber civics is throwing in the towel and saying, we can't really eliminate this, so let's see if we can find somebody who can help the children. And that's well and good, perhaps, but the problem is these people have no connection to Waldorf education, no connection to anthroposophy. Even the way they talk to the children, and this is true of most of those involved with bullying, social inclusion, diversity, working with gay children and things like that, it's all totally out of the head. And that's what Steiner wanted to avoid, above all, that it isn't just intellectual, conceptual, that the children are given imaginations and how to work with this. And basically, I think most Waldorf schools have sort of given up. They will have like a week, no screen week. But what does that mean? It means the rest of the year, 51 weeks of the year, there are screens, obviously, if you're saying no screens for 1 week. You're giving the go-ahead for the others. It's very hard to regulate home life of children.
It's also a health issue, and I should have thought that the Waldorf School movement would actually be educating itself in such a way that it can carry, in a principled way, educate the parents that this brain damage...
Exactly. There have been some efforts at this. Generally, when a lecture is advertised as about the media, nobody comes. Parents feel they're being preached to. They don't want to hear it. They feel guilty enough as it is. And it's a very difficult social issue. And many teachers will just say, I want that child in the class. I know there are these issues with this at home, but I don't want them to pull them out, because they feel I'm just harping on this all the time. And I don't think there's anyone in the Waldorf movement with the stature and with the inner knowledge of why that is a health issue and how it really works and what's going on. There's nobody there to bring that. It's much more sort of people who've read newspaper columns or articles in Psychology Today, and parents can read those too. Yeah. But there again, a lot of parents just don't have the time or the strength to be able to pull their children away from that, even though they know that damage is there. So it's again one of the things that we face, and we don't have the inner stature, we're not presenting enough of an alternative for parents to be able to see the wisdom of pulling their child away. And there are families that do, and there are families whose lives are profoundly changed. But once again, especially in the public school world, where teachers are not allowed to say anything about home life, you have to realize that they are legally, they're by regulation constrained. Even calling parents up is a very, very big deal. And certainly inviting yourself to the home for a dinner to meet the family, can't do it. If people invite you, you have to check with the administrator whether you're even allowed to go. That may show favoritism or something like that. Yeah.
I have a question related Jillian. To that, that a Waldorf teacher being aware of that and knowing what you've just said is not possible, whether some form of, I don't know how to put this really, through the teacher's connection or connecting, ongoing connecting with the angels of the children, whether he can call on that relationship to in some way intervene for the protection of the child, at least in the sleep life of the child.
I think that's a very, very good point. And there we're back again to, do I even believe that there's an angel over the child, that I have an angel who can communicate with their angel, where this school of the night, which is, as it were, a kind of microcosm of the school of Michael, if one really believes in that, then there is a possibility of making that kind of connection and bringing that healing. But if that isn't cultivated in the life of the school, if you're just doing Waldorf methods, as they call it, rather than real Waldorf education, that's difficult. That would always be the key. That the teacher is of, can bring so much to the child that a great deal of stuff will be bouncing off that child. I had a parent in my class whose parents, the child's grandparents, wanted to take him to Disney World. They started this campaign when he was 3, and they never let up. This was her in-laws. They just never stopped talking about it. And finally, they started talking to the child about it. And he was 7 years old, first grade. And I said, okay, let him go. You've got to do it for them. He loves them. They love him. Just let him go. So off he went to Disney World for a week. And he called his mother Tuesday night after being there for a couple of days. And she said, how is it? She was terrified what he was going to say. He said, it's so much fun, Mommy. It's so much fun. And she said, "How?" I said, always ask him to tell you. Don't tell him anything about it. So she said, how is it fun? And he said, every night in the hotel, Grandma and Grandpa let me knit for an hour, sometimes two. Okay, so there's angelic protection for you. He had very little to say about the rides and all of those things, but that was that meant something. So that's perhaps something that children can be brought in all circumstances. And, you know, I've said a lot about charters. Several years ago, Herb Hagen Sr. Sponsored, patronized a very costly effort at making a documentary about Waldorf education as it stood in the year 2009. And he asked me to kind of direct it and write the script and everything. And I thought, let's make this the real thing. We'll have charter schools, public schools, private schools, and also critics of Waldorf education. And with tremendous opposition from OSNA, who the Waldorf Schools Association, they refused to appear at all in the film because they said that would give credence then to the critics if they're in the same film. Anyway, this film gives you a picture. There are interviews with parents of kids from the charter schools, and you will understand why charter schools have to be. You will see these parents and hear what they say about their children. And one realizes, for all of the compromises, all of the dragging through the mud that's going to come as a result of this, this is a great, great gift, because these parents would never set foot in a private school. They wouldn't feel welcome there, and they could never afford it anyway. But anyway, it's called Considering Waldorf. If you kind of do a Google search, you'll be guided to Vimeo, which is a video, like a YouTube sort of thing. And it has thousands and thousands of people have watched this. And you could watch it for free, thanks to Herbert Higgins, Herb Higgins.
The charter schools are inspired also by Waldorf education. So it's not like it's one against the other.
No, but there's tremendous fear on the part of independent schools that have a charter in your neighborhood and you're going to lose all your students. In a rare number of situations, this has occurred, but that Waldorf school probably would have closed its doors anyway before too long. Most cases, people learn more about Waldorf through the charter and send their children to the independent school. It's a very interesting situation. But there again, there's that competitiveness, that fear that Waldorf schools have, we're not really doing that good a job anyway. We're not really doing what Steiner said, and if people find out, we'll be exposed and end. I just got an email a couple of days ago from the head of the Steiner Schools Association in England that Ofsted, the British National Education Service, is doing a kind of decided very quickly to do flash inspections of every Waldorf school in the country, and many of them are not measuring up. And this individual, a very devoted Waldorf teacher, said to me that three schools have closed and others will certainly be closing as well. And England doesn't have all that many Waldorf schools. And that's a very serious thing. Three there is like, you know, 10 or 12 closing in the States. So it's 100 years. It's, you know, there's a kind of reckoning that comes from many directions in many ways. And we'll see what finally survives. And hopefully Anthroposophy still has a place in the Waldorf movement. It's not a given anymore. It's like our whole political system in a way. It's like the whole liberal worldview of International Monetary Fund, World Bank, United Nations. Everything is up for grabs right now, and rightfully so.